You are listening to Zoom, the retro comic book show. Welcome to Doom. I'm your host, Timmy Doom. That was Lights by Ellie Goulding. I just played it because it was a number 5 song of this past week. It's probably going to be on the charts next week. And that version is better than the one with Lupe Fiasco, the rapper, which I can't stand. But anyway, I tried a new song. I probably won't do it again. Fuck it. I like the old shit. Classic rock will be the next one. But anyway, forget that. This is the 21st of July. And I haven't seen The Dark Knight yet, but I'm going to see it today. I was going with a bunch of friends. But now, y'all tell me, is this some old bullshit to you? One friend said, okay, I want everybody to get together. We're going to go see the movie. But we were going to do it in Long Beach at a beach. Not Long Beach, but Pike Beach. And it's just a nice area. There's a beach. It's a nice day out. It's a nice place to go. We'll probably have dinner before or after. And, you know, just have a good time. And people were long to get back to her. I got back right away. And everybody was like, yeah, we'll go. Then at the last minute, they cancel. It's cool. You know, if you got plans or if you're sick or something, yeah, don't go. But, How you gonna do it like 2 hours before? I think that's the bullshit part that a lot of people canceled like 2 hours before. But fuck it. So yeah, most of the party canceled. So I'm going by myself, which that pissed me off because I could have seen it yesterday. As a matter of fact, Kingsley is one of the people. Kingsley, who was co-host of my last incarnation of Doom, Kingsley the movie snob, who hated. Where he didn't like The Dark Knight. He thought it was overrated. He lambasted me for going to see superhero comic movies. He says he doesn't understand them. He says I should support black movies like Tyler Perry, not movies like Dark Knight. But yet, he went to go see The Dark Knight last night on the first night. And that's the reason why he doesn't want to go today. To him, people like him, I say fuck him. Okay, I could have went to go see it yesterday if all my friends was going to cancel. But anyway, fuck it. I'm going now. Unfortunately, putting a damper on the movie opening for some people. I guess it is. Because every time you bring up The Dark Knight, people bring up the shooting in Colorado that happened on the midnight opening of Dark Knight. What I don't understand is, y'all know probably the details. Y'all probably been reading in the news, so I won't go into the details of it. Except to say that a gunman... 24-year-old gunman went into one of the theaters in Aurora, Colorado, and just start shooting the place up. He let off gas canisters that, you know, had a noxious gas that caused people not be able to breathe real well. Then he starts shooting people. 50 some odd people were shot. 12 died. As far as I know, 12 died. And that's the gist of it. But what I want to know is why Christopher Nolan and the whole cast, who've been going around the world to different premieres, and they canceled all the premieres where they started in France, and they were going to do a premiere, but on light of that shooting, they canceled and they came back to America. they canceled. They had several other stops around the world. That if that guy went up and shot up a supermarket, would they have canceled the, you know, would they have canceled the premiere? If he had went up and shot up his school, what his college, would they have canceled the Dark Knight premieres all over the world? I don't get it. He just went into a theater. He could have went into any theater. Yeah, maybe it was the way he did it was Bane-like. And people were saying, okay, somebody said, oh, this he wasn't nothing like Bane. He had a gas mask. The killer, the massacre guy, he had a gas mask on and a bulletproof vest. That's nothing like Venom. I'm going to smack that person. Okay, that's close enough. I mean, not Venom, but I'm Bane. That's close enough to Bane. Okay, Bane has a mask on his face, and he has all kinds of... Sometimes he wears a vest that looks like a bulletproof vest in the movie. Get the fuck out of here. Anyway, but yeah, you could say that is a you know, he was inspired to go to Dark Knight and do that. But I don't understand. The movie opened up in 3,000 theaters. I don't understand why Christopher Nolan and them decided to cancel everything and come back. And it said all the females in the cast were crying and some of the guys. Yeah, okay, yeah, people are going to be sad about that. But did they say, oh, we can't do it now? What a bunch of fucking idiots. Anyway, oh, and some other idiot. Damn, you know what? I'm totally unprepared because I don't have my documents out to read off some of the things that was going on with this shooting. Oh, one of the things happened. It was a midnight showing. There were one of the people to be shot and killed was a 6-year-old girl, also in the theater, 4-month-old. And I shouldn't see, I tried to confirm this story, but I didn't go around to confirm it. But I'm going to say it anyway. I'm going to take it as that it happened. Now, there definitely was a 4-month-old there. Why in the fuck would you bring a kid to a movie theater for a movie that is. First of all, anybody under the age of 5 shouldn't be going to a movie theater for. I say 4. And the 4- and 5-year-olds should just be going to see Disney-type, cartoon-type movies, not Dark Knight. Okay? And for all those, someone protested. No, wait a minute. People take their kids to see movies all the time. Yeah, but not 13-year-old, I mean, not a PG-13 movie, which probably should be rated R, Dark Knight. You shouldn't take your 6-year-old to. And even if you decided to do that, the midnight showing, really? These people couldn't get a babysitter, so they brought a child and they brought a 4-month-old infant to a movie theater. What a bad parents of the year. And this is the part that I didn't want to repeat because I wanted to get, I wanted to get more corroboration on it. Because they're not going to single this guy out. But as an incidental to the story, when they were telling about people who were separated from their loved ones and trying to find out who was shot and killed and who wasn't. One of the people who was separated from his loved ones was the guy who brought the 4-month-old. And he brought his wife and they brought her child from her first pregnancy. That didn't have, it wasn't his kid, it's his stepdaughter. So he got a stepdaughter, his daughter, 4-month-old, and his wife. And his ass, basically, when the shooting started, his ass booked out the theater, got in the car, and drove away from the scene. The problem was, he was alone in the car. His family was still in the movie theater. So he left his 4-month-old daughter in the movie theater with a gunman shooting up to 50 people and letting off a gas bomb where people couldn't breathe. But his 4-month-old, and then he was hoping and praying. You know, he thought that his kid, so I guess that makes him a good guy. He was hoping and praying that his kid, wife, and his stepdaughter were fine. But later he found them at the hospital. He begged the authorities, you got to help me find my kid and see if they're at this hospital. And yes, the door authorities got them together because he's a deserving father to finally get with his family again. What a fucking piece of shit. Now, I can't say how I react in the same situation, but no, fuck that shit. I'm not going to fucking just bounce without at least grabbing the baby And then I could have that excuse, well, because the baby, you don't have to wait for the baby to run. At least you got the baby is light. You can carry it in the arms and just book out of there at your same speed. And then when, later on, when you get with your wife and her stepdaughter, because basically, who cares? I mean, if the stepdaughter's gone, that's part of the problem is gone. Okay, you got your wife and your kid together now. You don't have to worry about the stepdaughter. And you can get back to your wife and say, you know, I left you because I had to get the baby to safety. So at least take the four-month-old, asshole. What else happened? Oh, I wanted to read something then. I still haven't gotten it up while, because I was so into that, into yelling about this guy. See, I'm doing this live. I like to say that. I'm doing it live. Okay. Oh. So concerning that shooting here, and it's still taking a while to get up. Oh, jeez. Dang, I don't have it. Damn it. I don't fucking have it. I can't believe that I don't have it. That I don't have this thing that I wanted to share with you. Freaking computers, man. Freaking computers. Let's see. I'm going to give it one more look around. Okay, I don't have it. Damn. But basically, okay, this guy on Facebook, he posted a whole bunch of stupid shit. But one of the questions he asked was, is this going to affect the box office? Dude, fuck you in the box office for this fucking movie. How dare you? Is this shooting going to affect the box office? I can't believe that motherfucker asked that question. Is this going to affect the box office? So anyway. Oh, and speaking of that, though, they did predict now. Because a lot of times the predictions are correct. They predicted that over the weekend, Dark Knight will make $180 million. Now that's about $30 million less than Avengers. So if it does make $180 million over this weekend, then of course you're going to get people saying, the only reason it didn't make as much is because the shooting soured people to go in to see it. It would have beat Avengers otherwise, you know, even if you take off for Avengers box office from the 3D, because there's no 3D showings for the Batman. And it's like, whatever it makes, it would have made anyway. People are not going to stop seeing this movie because of what happened. Let's see here. Is that all I want to say about the shooting? Dang, I am really unprepared today. Oh, another thing, I didn't copy this either from Facebook. People were just basically saying, okay, the shooter was a white guy, and the news report went on about how he was a med student who quit in his third year, he's a brilliant guy or whatever, and how he felt a lot of pressure lately and stuff, and they pointed out, the critics on Facebook pointed out, if this was Hispanic or black, that wouldn't even be the case. He would just be a gangbanger, a cold-hearted killer, and they wouldn't go into his personal history. That I don't know about. And I don't know why people is going on about race. The only characteristics about this guy was the fact that he went to med school, and he was staying at he went to university for medical to be a doctor, and that's where he was living, in a place where medical students were living. So that's a part of his description. So of course it's going to be in there. So that's all I want to say about Dark Knight for now. I'll let you know when I come back what I thought of the movie. A comic book I read yesterday when I should have been looking for a job. When I went to the library, I had to get out the hot house. The hot place where I live. And, I got fucked up. Okay, as you know, I'm unemployed. I don't have that much money. I recently came into some money, and I put half of it into my bank account. And I went in yesterday to put some more money in there because I'm trying to save up to get another car. And, they said it's on hold, and I should have known why it's on hold. I knew in the back of my head who put it on hold, as they're going to take it out of my account, the IRS from New York State. When I lived in New York State 10 years ago, over 10 years ago, I was poor as fuck. Okay, and I still, wait a minute, I still am poor as fuck. I was poor, I'm more poor now, actually. But I wasn't making no money. And recently I heard that, hey, you owe New York State $320 income tax, state income tax, when you left. And now it's up to 100, now it's up to 820 that you owe them. And it's like, I didn't get, now, they sent me this letter months ago. I didn't get in contact with them because they was complaining that they were going to take the wages out. They say, if you don't get back contact with us, we're going to take your checks from your job. Well, I don't have a job, so they couldn't take the checks from my job. So I just ignored them, and they put this hold on my account now. and August something, all the money is gone. So I'm back to where I'm started. And it's like, and it wasn't that I wanted to ignore the IRS. I said, when I get some money, that's when I go to them. But I don't want to go to them now because I don't have any fucking money. Okay? And I need a new car to get a job, a reliable car, so I can get a job. But now they're taking that money. So it's always, if you're poor, you're fucked. So if you're a kid, if you're young, get as much money as you can now. Do everything you can now. Work for 80 hours a week now and get a house and car as soon as you can, and then you'll have something to build on, because otherwise people just gouge the fuck out of you. Now, well, that's my Tim Terrell lesson of the day, or Timmy Thum lesson of the day. I can't give my government name. I gave my secret identity's name. Anyway, what else I had to, oh, so when I should have been looking for a job yesterday at the library, I was reading the rest of the Guardians of the Galaxy, because I can't check any of the books out, because 10 years ago when I came here and I lived in Pasadena, I ran up the library card. Usually when I lived in Rochester, because I worked at the library in Rochester, New York in the 90s, and I knew that after 3 years, 3 or 4 years, they just canceled everything. Even if you owed a lot of money on the card, they canceled it. They may have kept, if it's really outstanding, they would keep the outstanding fee in the computer. Like if you lost books, yeah, then they would keep that shit in the computer. But for me, they kept for 10 years. I lost the book and I had some late fees in 2003 when I first came out here. And they kept that shit on the book. So I can't even use the computer at the library. I'm like, damn. So I was reading in the library. I was reading Guardians of the Galaxy, the first 12 issues, which is the first two trades, because of this movie that's coming out. And I liked it. It's good. And I have fond memories of the 70s version, 1970s and 1990s version. But you know what? Their stories probably wasn't any better. These stories here were good. It was just it's a ragtag team of, and the reason I'm reading it because the movie is gonna come out in about 2 years. This lineup is Star-Lord, Drax, the Destroyer, Adam Warlock, which I didn't even know he was alive, which it's debatable. I think it's a mystery as to who this Adam Warlock is, if he's a clone or if he's the real thing. Rocket Raccoon is there. I don't like the way they draw him in this series. He looks too, I mean, he looks like a, he just looks like a, I don't, I, he's not aesthetically pleasing. I'm not sure if I like this version of Rocket Raccoon. And then there's Quasar, the new Quasar, not Wendell Vaughn, whatever his name was. Gamora, who's a badass bitch. Bug, Mantis, Vance, and from the old ones, Vance Astro. And Starhawk, but as far as I see Starhawk in these first 12 issues, which is like 4 years ago, I don't know where they're at now. I don't even know if the Galaxy, Guardians of the Galaxy is still going in the Marvel Universe, but anyway, Starhawk is kind of a badass. You don't know if he's bad or good in this one. I like it. It's cosmic. Oh, toward the last 12 issues, I'm trying to remember what happened I forgot what happened in the first six issues. All I know is a lot of badass shit happened. Okay, there was a Skrull invasion on their base, which is called Nowhere. Actually, their base nowhere. It's not their base. They're just staying on there. It's kind of like Babylon 5 or Deep Space Nine. And there's a whole bunch of different alien races on there. But they found out there were some Skrulls in hiding on this base. And they just took it as the Skrulls were, you know, they were sabotaging the place. Because they have a little warp drive thing in there where that could take them to any place in the universe. And it was blown up. So these Skrulls are on this terrorist attack, and they got to stop these Skrulls. And there's a whole bunch of infighting in the team, and you know, espionage, and finding Vance Astro, just like he was found him frozen, just like you found Captain America frozen. And if you know anything about Vance Astro, he has Captain America's shield. So this takes place present day, whereas the Guardians of the Galaxy, their original Guardians of the Galaxy, took place in the 31st century. So Vance Astro is back in time, and Starhawk is back in time. Those are the only two from the original that we see here. I like it. I like both series, especially the second six issues, the second trade that had some more cosmic stuff in it. I forgot his name. He's not Terax. The Negative Zone, the 42 prison. From the negative zone, which is from Civil War. It's a Civil War tie-in. I love all the Civil War tie-ins. Also, there was two story arcs there. There's Siege on the prison in Negative Zone, which was good, and Drax and Quasar fighting on the Plane of Death. To get Moondragon back and bring her back. And so in that storyline, you had Moondragon, Drax, Quasar, Mentor, Maelstrom. They were in Oblivion. It was awesome. I like that one. Oh, I like the art in that one too. But I don't know who the artist was because I read it in the library and I didn't write any of this shit down. So yeah, I recommend checking out that Guardians of the Galaxy. I want to see some more Guardians of the Galaxy comic books so I can get ready for this movie coming out in 2 years. And a lot of fanboys were bitching and complaining that it wasn't the old one. The old one is better, the old one. But yet, I bet you if they said, we're going to do the new one. The new movie. I bet you we're going to use Steve Gerber's Guardians of the Galaxy. Then you have a bunch of people complaining about that. Where's Rocket Raccoon? Where's Groot? It's like, fuck you, fanboy. I hate fanboys. I want to do a motherfucking Inglourious Basterds on fanboys, just get them all in the same theater. Just be like, yeah, we're gonna show all Roger Corman's Fantastic Four, the Dolph Lundgren Punisher. We got a old bunch of old cartoons from the 60s and 70s because these are the real version. These are better than that. And you get all the shittiest fanboys in there. Then you just blow up the theater, blow up the fucking theater. Oh, I shouldn't be saying that after this Colorado massacre. Oh, my bad. Anyway, what else? Oh, talking about that Guardians of the Galaxy, I just had some questions about that because in the 42 prison, okay, Terax is gonna lay siege to the 42 prison so he can have a portal to Earth, and he makes Star-Lord, who has been exiled to the Negative Zone, he makes him work for him and go into the 42 prison to negotiate with the prisoners. Because that's all that's left in the prison is the prisoners. All the wardens left and left everybody there. That's shitty right there. But you have to read the story and understand what's going on in 42 prison. But the prisoners are the only ones fighting to protect themselves from Terax's army. They're holding off Terax's army in the siege. You know, just like, you know, like storming a fort, like when people try to attack a castle. And one of the prisoners is Jack Flagg. And I'm wondering, how the fuck is Jack Flagg alive after Warren Ellis's Thunderbolts? And then I said, how is he alive and walking? I assumed that he was going to be walking, but no, he was in a wheelchair. And this is the thing, too. He's the leader of the prisoners. How is the leader of prisoners who all have superpowers and they all hate each other? And he was a good guy. He was really a good guy at one time. But the top prisoners are Black Condor, who is a bad guy. They're all bad guys. Gorilla Man, Condor, and a few others. I'm like, how the fuck, how did that happen? How is he the leader? And the most perplexing question I have about Jack Flag in 42 is, how did he keep his red, white, and blue hair dyed that color? His hair dyed red, white, and blue, which is the shittiest thing in comics. But more importantly is, he's in prison. How does he keep his hair? And the roots are red, white, and blue too. I mean, he's freshly dyed. So how the fuck does he keep his hair dyed in prison? That's what I want to know. Who's dyeing his hair? You know what? In prison, I don't want to know who's dyeing his hair. And I don't want to know what they're using on second thought. I'm just perplexed. And at the end of the story, they give him his ability to walk back. Because that's important, that we have a character like Jack Black running around the Marvel Universe. He's a very important character to the universe. What else I got? Oh, and all you people talking about this man movie, everybody's always assuming Thanos is going to be in everything. Thanos, this is going to be a setup that Thanos in Marvel movie universe is the Guardians of the Galaxy. Yeah, I doubt it. Yeah, watch, they set in the 31st century fighting the Badoon. Watch. They just take these characters and just transplant them to the 31st century. Betcha. And I can't wait to hear the fanboys whine even more after that. I hate you, fanboys. I fucking hate you. What else I got on the docket? I also read this week a new comic, which I forgot to talk about in the new comic show. Captain Marvel. I read that in the store. I wasn't going to buy it. Fuck. Captain Marvel, it's Miss Marvel, but they're calling her Captain Marvel now, and they gave her a new suit, which sucks shit. But I'm hoping it's like the ratio, the relation, like, as badass as the suit is, okay, the last series that we had with Miss Marvel that I know of was Miss Marvel, written by Brian Reed, and she had her suit is the original costume she's worn for a very long time, since at least the 90s, is variation on her 70s outfit. So I'm cool with it's a tight suit, but the comic book sucked because Brian Reed's writing is the worst in comics, and he shouldn't have another job writing. I don't know how he kept his job writing Miss Marvel. Some of the most, he only wrote. I read several issues of his run on Miss Marvel, and there was only one good story, and that was maybe two. And that was all dealing with Civil War and her training Arachne and the issue where she fought the Spider-Woman. Not the good Spider-Woman, the awful Spider-Woman. So, yeah, there's that. Brian Reed's writing sucked, but her costume was good. This new series, the costume is the worst you can imagine it, almost. Almost the worst. So hopefully all the stories will be good. In that case, I'll buy it. Because I don't, you know, have a horrible costume and a horrible haircut. That's so unsexy. That is so unsexy. If you had a woman dressed like that in a movie for Captain Marvel, that would just be awful. Her looking as shitty as she can look. Goddamn, but the story I liked, because it was just her fighting alongside Captain America and Spider-Man was there. The art is weird in it. The art doesn't match up with what it is, what the comic book. You know, the style of comic book that it is, it's not, the art doesn't match. But I kind of like the art. It's just, I don't know. I don't know. And I don't know who did it. All I know is I recommend issue number one. It's just a fluff issue. It's done in one. It's not no stupid continuing at the end. You got to buy the next issue. No, this is the first issue. Let us get a story. Let us see where she's at now. Let us settle in. And then if we want to buy the second one, we'll buy it. But don't commit us to that. Just like, you know, like DC did with the new Flash series. Oh, you're committed now. You bought his first issue. Now this is continuing another story. Same thing with Mr. Terrific. It's like, no. Let us see the character where they're at. End it at issue one. Then do another one done in one issue and issue two. Just to see them do adventures, character. We don't want to be involved with them in a big story yet. But this is what they did. I mean, yeah, this is what they did. They did it the right way in Captain Marvel. I don't know who this writer is. I forgot his name, too. He's not a big-name writer. He did good on this first issue, and he's got me for the second. I may buy the second issue of Captain Marvel. I was always a Miss Marvel fan. So, oh, yeah, and in this issue, basically Captain America was saying, yo, you need to call yourself Captain Marvel. Take his name. You're a badass bitch. Do it. Forget that Ms. Marvel bullshit. At what point they're fighting a bad guy, and the bad guy was like, why you got me fighting this bitch, basically? And it's like, come on, man. She's powerful. Ain't nobody going. But he said, well, you fight me, Captain America. You could take me out, but don't let this motherfucking no-name bitch take me out. First of all, Ms. Marvel wasn't a no-name, isn't a no-name. She's more powerful than Captain America. And she points out, yo, I'm a colonel. I outrank Captain America. She said that in front of Captain America, so I give her points for that. Once again, I recommend the Captain Marvel from Marvel Comics, the new Captain Marvel series. Now, I'm going to have to take a little bit of a break so I can come back and talk about a piece of shit comic. I'll be back in a moment. Back. This is gonna be a bitch. I'm presenting a new segment on Zoom. This is gonna be an ongoing segment. I intend to do it all the way to the end of this of the issues that I have. Anyway, I have about 12 issues of this comic book series called Quantum and Woody from Acclaim Comics. Quantum and Woody is one of those things where you once in a while you'll get people. This is the greatest thing since sliced bread, and they should have never canceled it. It was great. It was beautiful. But only one person I know, Derek Coward, sang the praises of this series. And I thought about it, and I said, okay, well, I want to read this. Okay, if Derek's saying it's good, it must be good. I got lucky and found in the quarter bin a few years ago, maybe, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, I found like 14 issues in a row, I think. Yeah, I think I had all 14 issues, and since then I lost a couple of them. But yeah, I read it. I read about 4 or 5 issues. I couldn't get through the rest. It was awful. It was horrid. But I kept these 14 comics because I wanted to rip them a new shred, rip them a new ass, because people were saying this is good. Then I thought about it. I said, wait a minute, people aren't saying this is good. This is Derek's opinion. Okay, he's the only one. So this series ain't going to make no sense if everybody agrees that it's bad. Derek's the only one who thinks it's good. So I looked up on the internet to get corroboration that this is, everybody else thought it was bad. And no, the reason I remember it being a critical darling is because Derek's not the only one who said it was good. I only found a couple of articles reviewing the series Quantum and Woody, and they were not only were they praising the series, they were sucking the dick of the creator. Or they were figuratively sucking the dick. You would think that if they met Christopher Priest, they would get down on their knees and suck him dry. These two articles on it, on, and it's like, no, Quantum and Woody wasn't that fucking good. And I wonder if it's the what you call the Priest effect, that because I recently was reading his, I was reading his Black Panther, and I couldn't go on because it was such shit. And Peter Rios praised Christopher Priest's Black Panther, but you notice like these Christopher Priest comics only have a few people diehard standing by it. And I went through the Christopher Priest effect myself with something called, I think it's called White Lion, The Concrete Jungle. 10, 11 years ago, I picked this thing up in a 25 cent bin, and it was number one issue of Concrete Jungle. It was supposed to be an ongoing series, and I loved it so much, I was asking the comic book shop owner about it. He's like, they canceled that. That's the first issue. And it's written by Christopher Priest, and I thought it was the greatest thing since sliced bread. And since then, I moved to LA. I lost the comic book. You know, I wasn't really collecting comics anyway. So, and I stopped with the comics until 2006. And a few years after that, I didn't find it. I went online to Christopher Priest. It was a few years ago. I went online to Christopher Priest's webpage, and he had Concrete Jungle, the whole thing, online because he wanted. He's like, "Yo, this is a great comic. This is one of my better works." And look what they did. They canceled. I didn't get to finish it. I got some more scripts though, and I said, "Good. I'm gonna read it. I'm gonna ask for those scripts because I've been looking all over." You know what? 10 years ago, I went to the lens. I looked up, I found out where Christopher Priest lived. He lives in Colorado somewhere, at least 10 years ago he did. And I looked up all kinds of directories and calling 411 for Christopher Priest's phone number. And I got two or three of them at Christopher Priest for, you know, Boulder, Colorado, or wherever he lived. And I got two or three Christopher Priest numbers, and I called all of them, and none of them were that Christopher Priest, because I wanted to find out if there's more scripts, more stories to White Lion. Flash to 10 years later, or, you know, whatever, 7-8 years later, I find it, read it online. I said, I'm going to read this, then I'm going to ask him for the scripts. I read that thing, my jaw dropped. Awful. I don't know what, and I was in my late 20s when I first read that comic book. What was I thinking? Why did I think that was so great of a story? It wasn't. It wasn't at all. So it's happened to me. But I'm going to prove that basically Christopher Priest sucks. Oh, there was some work that he did under the name Jim Owsley that I loved as a kid. His Power Man and Iron Fist I thought was the greatest thing in comics. But of course, you know, years later I found some of those issues, especially the, Transcode Mafia sent me one via, you know, a digital copy, and of one of my favorite Luke Cage stories back then. The reason why I was a Luke Cage fan from Jim Owsley's run, and reading it now, it reads awful. It reads bad. I'm going to rip that one up too. I got to go get a hold of that. But here's Quantum and Woody. Here's a great example of the Christopher Priest effect taking hold of someone. Now, I took one of the articles from the internet. I'm going to read what this fool saying about this series. Craig Lemon is his name. His article is called "Whatever Happened to Quantum and Woody?" Well, he starts out the article with "I present this." Okay, I'm going to talk in his voice now. The affected voice is him, and I'm going to talk normal for me. You know, like Batman, like Christopher Bell does in Batman movies. Okay. In the first paragraph, he writes this. He writes, "I presented an article called The Great Acclaimed Confession that dictated my appreciation for the short-lived second incarnation of acclaimed comics. If you don't believe any reasonable comic patron would admit something so strange, browse the archives for conclusive proof. Three of the company's properties were detailed at length, and the quality execution that garnered my cynical attention was briefly discussed. Believe it or not, one of the main players was intentionally left out of the equation because the dreamer in me conjured a much more elaborate setup for the following piece, but the circumstances in reality intruded quite quickly, as it often does. What the fuck is he talking about? I wasn't going to read all that, but it was, I couldn't believe. and he was talking about how he appreciated Acclaim. Really, really? Why? Why? Shadow Man under Acclaim sucked. It bastardized the Valiant version. Who gives a fuck about that? And they have, oh, they have Troublemakers by Fabian Nicenza. You have, oh, we, that's a must have. The 30,000th reboot of Magnus Robot Fighter. That's not gonna work. Give it up. Bloodshot and Ninjak, basically 90s extreme type heroes. And Ninjak, really? Okay, they brought, out of all the comics they're going to bring back from Valiant, they brought Ninjak. What a fucking joke. Okay, and I'm not going to say anything about that Exo Man of War. I didn't read that. Oh, Trinity. I'm not going to say nothing about the Turok Evil either. But it's written by Fabian. It was written by Fabian, so it's probably not that good. But let's get to Quantum. What do you say about Quantum and Woody? I feel the question must be posed. Whatever happened to Quantum and Woody? And why would comics be a better place if it was still around? Those unenlightened, gather round. I'm preparing to introduce you to one of the finest superhero tales of our modern age. History in the making that went largely unnoticed. Meet Quantum and Woody and apologize for taking so long to make their acquaintance. First of all, motherfucker, if I see you, I'm gonna fucking kick the shit out of you. For you to even say those words, even if you were doing it in jest, even if you were doing hyperbole, I want to punch you in the throat. Okay, then check this out. This shows you how, what kind of quality of writer this guy is, because in the next couple of paragraphs, or next paragraph or so, I'm not gonna read everything, just most of it. He goes on to describe the series, and later on, after those couple of paragraphs, he admits that he took the description from the back of the trade. So he wrote as if he wrote him. He put in his article as if he wrote himself the blurb from the back of the trade of the comic book, with no italics, no box, nothing to separate it, no saying from the back of the trade. No, he wrote it in as if it was part of his article. The same font. No, it's not italicized. I'm like, what an awful fucking writer. And he wrote, and I might as well read it so you'll get acquaintance of who Quantum and Woody is, even though you are going to be acquainted with them through my me ripping it up. And I'm going to let you know right now, the rest of the show, this show is going to be a long show, just because this is the rest of this whole show is about Quantum and Woody. If you don't want to hear it, turn it off. Okay. Quantum, Eric Henderson, and Woody Woodrow Von Shelton grew up together, nearly inseparable despite the vast differences in skin color and temperament. Now, before you get the wrong idea, they were not a couple. They were the closest of friends. One day, Woody disappeared from their sheltered upper-class life, abandoning his best friend forever. But they were not a couple. Now, these two former best friends are reunited and struck with each other for the rest of their lives. I'm sorry, stuck with each other for the rest of their lives while making and trying to make sense of their fractured friendship as superheroes. But they are not a couple. Get used to that couple shit, because, yeah, this was a blur from the back of comic books, because in the second issue, they run that joke about them being not a couple into the ground, which basically they are. It's a lot of gay subtext in this comic book. Anyway, and basically probably it's insulting the gays probably, but forget about all that. The question is, okay, oh, I'm sorry, I'm going to skip that. He goes on the right.
When the saga begins, Eric and Woody have been reunited by tragedy when their fathers are killed in a mysterious plane crash. 15 years have passed since Woody moved away and left Eric alone, and time has apparently not healed this wound. After the two young men are fingered as suspects in the tragic accident, Eric sets out on the trail of the true killers, bringing the wisecracking Woody along for the ride and picking up a pair of control bands found in his father's personal items. An outburst coupled with a lab explosion binds them together forever, forced to touch their control bands every 24 hours, lest their bodies revert to pure energy, causing them to vanish into nothingness. Cool setup, right?
No. No, it's not, actually. And if when we get into the comic book, you'll see that the comic book doesn't even tell you this much about the characters. You gotta figure it out through several issues. I mean, and actually, you can put the pieces together yourself reading the comic book, but this, they don't say any of this shit in the comic book. You just left to figure it out. And yes, nobody should have to force feed the audience anything, but I'm talking about vital shit, vital things. Why would somebody do this? Why would somebody do that? Is left out of the comics. Just like with most of Priest's writing, which is why he's not a good writer. And when I say Christopher Priest, I mean Jim Owsley, the kiss-ass who used to work for Jim Shooter and Marvel in the 80s, black guy. Not the science fiction writer Christopher Priest. I don't know anything about any of his work, which goes to beg the question that T-Mafia asked on an old episode of Doom. He said, yeah, why in the fuck would you, who is already established as a writer at Marvel Comics, go on and change your name to an already established science fiction writer? That's like me saying, okay, I'm writing as Timmy Doom, but you know, I'm gonna change my name to Stephen King. That's gonna make my job selling my work easier. Okay, now I'm just gonna read some more bits of this asshole. Right, realizing one cannot survive on premise alone, the execution is truly what made Q&W stand tall among their competitors on the racks. The focus was shifted from flashy heroics and grimacing villains placed solely in the hands of the main characters that serve to literally write the stories by themselves. The story is hardly written. Okay. Yeah, the execution does stand out as bad, as fucking horrible. One is hard-pressed to identify the most hilarious predicament facing Q&W over their book's lifespan. Could it be the lab accident that bonded them together in the first place? First of all, he wrote identity instead of identify, so I had to correct that. One is hard-pressed to identity. I dismiss this man. He's a hack. How dare you kiss the ass of this comic book? And here's some more ass kissing. Priest also sowed the seeds for a narrative style that would follow him over to Marvel's Black Panther. The easiest comparison would be to Pulp Fiction, in which the story is related in chapters that may or may not occur in chronological order. Each chapter is given a clever name based on its content, and only when all of the pieces are presented in front of you does the story truly reveal itself. First of all, asshole. Okay, Quentin Tarantino, each of his little story, the fact that you would put Quentin Tarantino's name in the same frame of this article, and Pulp Fiction's name, and relate it to Quantum and Woody. Yeah, you definitely going to get it in the throat if you see me, asshole. I had more to say about this, but I just want to say Quentin Tarantino, each of his stories in Pulp Fiction could stand alone on its own. If you take one of the bits and pieces that is titled its own story in Quantum and Woody, most of them you can't take on their own. You'll be like, what the fuck is going on? And some of them you can. They're just lame jokes. Lame. Okay? And he calls it a narrative style that is similar to Pulp Fiction, but I call it a badly done ripoff. Yeah, Quentin Tarantino steals shit, but he always makes the stuff that he steals better than the original. If you're a fan of the superhero genre and well-developed characters, these characters are not well-developed. Okay, people liked Quantum and Woody. I'm going to tell you why they liked them. Because everybody Okay, everybody, and I'm even looking at these writers who wrote these articles. Everybody I know who likes Quantum and Woody are desperate for a series where black and white characters are inseparable. And that's it. They want to, I would like a somebody of a different race to be like a brother to me. That way to show that there's no such thing as racism. That's those type of people. It's a similar reason why people like Green Lantern and Mosaic. They needed it to fill their views of what black people should mean to society and what black and white people should mean to one another. But neither of what I read of either of those two series, Mosaic or Quantum Woody, is written well. Okay, and both characters in both series are unlikable, as you will see when we go over Quantum and Woody. I read comic books because I like, or I read any story, comic book, novel, go and see a movie because I want a good story. Forget racial harmony bullshit. Give me a good fucking story. And now, ladies and gentlemen, Quantum and Woody. Okay, these stories, as that other writer wrote, they're separated into one-page chapters, some of them two-page chapters. It opens with this two lead teenagers, or two leads when they were kids, when they were teenagers, Quantum and Eric. I'm sorry, Quantum and Woody, which is Woody and Eric Henderson. They're carrying a dead dog. Okay, yeah, that's right. They're carrying a dead dog up a half a flight of stairs, literally 9 steps. They drop the dog on the way up the stairs because they're having trouble to figure out who's pushing, who's pulling. The reason I want to go into this ridiculousness of this scene is because the trouble it takes for two strapping 15-year-old boys to take a 50 to 60-pound dog up 9 steps. Okay, the trouble that they have taking them up the shortest flight of stairs is would only be realistic if they were both 90-year-old autistic women with severe arthritis. The scene isn't funny. It's frustrating and it's fucking pathetic. Okay, let's start the insult counter. Insult 1. Eric tells Woody he's an idiot who should be sterilized, and Woody calls... he also calls Woody a racist. And Woody says some stupid shit. Here's the thing you get about Woody, the white character. He's somebody, if somebody wanted to copy the snark of Deadpool, but they really couldn't do it. That is what Woody is. That's it. And at times they try to make him like Jim Carrey in this comic book. Okay. By the way, the art is by M.D. Bright, a horrible artist, because all his characters are so blocky and stiff. Continuing, okay, the real reason they couldn't carry the dog up the stairs is not because they couldn't lift it, it's because they couldn't cooperate with one another long enough to figure it out. They argue the whole time, with Eric calling Woody a racist a bunch of times. So that's their friendship. This is the first time we get their friendship that they're bickering, and none of the bickering is funny. Then they drop the dog, and we discover the dog is quote unquote dead because Woody attempted to kill it by feeding it drugs, because every time they would walk past it, the dog would bark at him. It's one of their neighbor's dogs. So that's a character that we like, a dog murderer. Okay, who's tried to kill a dog because the dog was barking at him. The dog was behind a fence. Okay, later on it turns out the dog is alive. He couldn't even do that job competently. In the next chapter, it sets up Eric, okay, and Woody peeping through Amy Fishbine's window, okay? She's their little neighbor friend, about 15 years old. While Woody is, like, looking, and they're like, oh, damn, look at her, man. And then Eric's like, let me see. He puts Eric up there. Eric looks and finds out that it's not Amy Fishbine, but her mother. And while he's doing this, Woody sees Amy and her father are coming up to him, and he leaves his friend Eric there to face the wrath. And up to this point, they haven't established liking each other or even being friends. So, one, they hate each other. Two, not only do they hate each other, but Woody is not a friend at all. He leaves his friend to get stabbed in the back. He stabs his friend in the back, basically. The third vignette we see, Eric is sad when it turns out Woody took off. He goes to school and Woody's desk is empty. But I don't feel anything about him being sad because they only bickered and stabbed each other in the back. And here we find out, okay, Woody's in the bathroom. I'm not Woody, I'm sorry, get them mixed up. They're both stupid characters. Eric, the black character, sad that Woody took off. He's sitting in the bathroom and he says, Woody gone, just like that. He didn't even say goodbye. And he's talking to his other friend who's black too. And they both go to like one of those private schools where everybody's got to wear suits. I think it's an all-boys school. He said, Woody used to... Okay. There were some jokes here, some stupid jokes. But he said, why did my friend just leave me? And the other black character says, who knows? Maybe it's because you're black. And we see Eric moping. And that's gonna come into play later. But basically, he hates his friend now. They never spoken to each other 15 more years. And we're supposed to believe that they're best friends. That he doesn't know why his friend left. They didn't contact each other. They always argue. And this is our setup to the characters. And why? Why are we supposed to like them? Flash forward to 15 to 30 years. I'm sorry, 15 years later. They're probably about 30 years old. Late 20s, maybe. They're at a funeral. It doesn't tell you who the funeral is at all. But we figure out later that it's both of their fathers died. And that's why they're both at the funeral. And the first thing that Woody and Eric see when they see each other is they run each other with their fist as if they're going to punch each other in the face. And that scene ends. Good friends there. There's some more corny jokes here. I can't. It flashed forward to them being in a lab, one of their father's lab, slamming two wrist gauntlets together, and they're both in superhero costumes. And here's one of the jokes. Woody has on one boot, and the other foot is bare. He points at his feet and says, this is Woody's foot. He points to the booted foot and says, this is Woody's foot on drugs. That's the extent of the jokes. Here's another joke. Quantum and Woody have been captured by the police. Don't ask me how or why they're being held for questioning. But they're sitting in the police station, both wearing full superhero outfits and costumes. And Eric has a whole mask on and cape. He calls himself Quantum. And the cops ask for his name. He tells them Quantum. Then the cop says, are you guys superheroes? And Quantum says, don't be ridiculous. I want to punch somebody. I want to fucking punch somebody. The detective never identifies himself, so we don't know his name through most of this. But he exposits that Eric and Woody's fathers were partners and founders in a firm research. And they both died in a helicopter crash. So now Eric and Woody are suspects. Now we get this from three panels of dialogue. We never knew that either his guys or the fathers were scientists before then. And that brings up a whole bunch of questions as to why Eric didn't know why Woody left, and why, if they're friends, didn't Woody tell him, and didn't they talk about it? Since their fathers are partners in the same business and continued being partners for the next 15 years. So, after all this, they're looked at as possible suspects, and their father's death, which was a fucking helicopter crash. Because they're suspicious that both of these guys died in helicopter crash. Why would it be? Helicopters crash sometimes. The two were business partners and they were in the same plane and the plane crashed. Coincidence. There's no evidence that there was murder. But nevertheless, Quantum and Woody are looked at by the cops, and so is one of their father's assistants, a guy named David Warrant. So they go follow this motherfucker around. Long story short, they end up, first of all, they tail him to like a donut shop. And because they're arguing and bickering, he leaves the donut shop and, you know, leaves right under their noses. They don't notice that he's gone. So now they're totally incompetent. So this is supposed to be a comedy, right? It's supposed to be a comedy. Since they're horrible superheroes, they can't even tell somebody correctly. Long story short, they end up trapped in their father's lab by David Warrant, who it looks like is trying to kill them. He traps them in the lab and turns on this machine, which, you know, tears up their molecular structure. While they're trapped, they were fighting before Warrant trapped them in the lab. And now that they are trapped, instead of working things out to see how they can get out of it, they duke it out some more. Okay, and they inadvertently escape by banging the two gauntlets because their father created these gauntlets and Eric wears them. But Woody insisted that he be able to wear one since their fathers created it together. So they, while they're fighting, they accidentally knock the gauntlets together and they escape the lab before they die, before the molecular machine tears up their bodies. Now they end up transported outside the building. The whole time they were wearing, now half of this comic they're wearing gym clothes and gym wear, okay, when they were in the lab, trapped in the lab, but now they're in the police department because this is what happens. They were in gym clothes, they're wearing street clothes, they bang the gauntlets together and they end up transported outside the lab and the detective is sitting out there waiting for them. Why is the detective there? Okay, the next scene we see with the detective, they're fully geared up in their superhero outfits in his interrogation room. How'd that happen? Why don't y'all explain stuff to us? If there's stuff that happened in between then, you really ought to give some explanation before you get on to the next issue. Okay. Okay. Here, I wasn't going to mention this, but there's a scene in here, but I will, because in the next issue, there's some controversy about the use of curse words in the comic book and the N-word and all that shit. So, let me get to that page. Page 22. They flash back again to childhood and or Eric flashbacks, and he's like, why did my friend leave me when we were kids? And a flashback, and instead of a black kid, it's another blonde-haired white kid. And he says, how come he left? How come Woody just left me? And the blonde kid walks up next to Eric and says, it's probably because you're a nigger. Okay? And they have an argument in the present day while they're fighting in a lab. And he says, you never called me, Woody. You never called me. You never reached out. And Woody says, I never knew your phone number. So are we supposed to laugh at that? The two friends who are supposed to be best friends, the writer would have to believe, don't have each other's phone number. Woody says, I never wrote you because mom said you moved away. Wait a minute, that's what Woody said. He says, I never wrote you, Eric, because mom said you moved away. But they established earlier that Woody is the one who moved away. This is nonsensical as Lady Gaga's lyrics to her songs. This comic book doesn't make any sense. Woody tells Eric, I never wrote to you because mom said you moved away, even though he's the one who moved away. How can anybody like this comic book? I don't even know if I can go on. And in another burst of anger, now they both lived, when they grew up together, they lived in up, they lived in this rich place in Connecticut where all the rich people live. In Connecticut. All of Connecticut is rich, okay? Might as well say, but they live in an upper rich part because their fathers are loaded because they own this science technology corporation. But yet, Woody and his mom moved away after the divorce, and he never talked to his friends again. And he says, how convenient, this is what Eric says, you couldn't pull yourself away from the sun deck long enough to find out. And Eric says, you're the one who had a sun deck, jerk. I had a fire escape. And Eric says, liars, both of our fathers were loaded. And Woody says, you're so simple. Okay, if there's more to it, then Woody, why don't you explain, Eric, what happened? Later on in the series, I'm going to just say it now, we find out that Woody's mother took him, and they didn't get any money from his father, and he grew up poor, which is totally un-fucking believable. Okay? That's just not believable at all. And that's why I hate this writer, and I hate this fucking comic book. Let's see if there's any more bullshit in this comic book. Basically, that's it. The part about them, why they become superheroes, is said later. It's just awful. MD writes, art is awful as usual. Christopher Priest writing, aka Jim Owsley writing, is awful as usual. Next time I'm trying to make it short, I'm going to make this segment, hopefully I can make it down to 5 minutes. I doubt it. But I had to go overboard this time on this one. Quantum and Woody sucks. Thunecast.blogspot.com is my website. Email is blackpun2000@yahoo.com. Next issue, I'll read some of the feedback that I got on the website, because you can comment on the website, thumcast.blogspot.com. So go ahead and do that. I'm going to get something to eat and check out The Dark Knight Rises. I'll hit you back then with a review. Until next time, peace. And sorry about the length of this show. Sorry, dude.